Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett, and we are here for your SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired on September the 7th. Wade Barrett's return, further setting up of Night of Champions. Jake and I get together every week and do an audio review of SmackDown. We make it all access for all the readers of our site, but it's not the only audio that's produced here on the site each week. We do a ton of audio, usually 6 hours or more every single week of new audio exclusive to our members. Jason Powell does a WWE Raw breakdown, just like the one Jake and I are about to do for SmackDown. Will Pruitt comes along usually on Fridays to produce the TNA Impact Wrestling audio review. Will and Jake get together on Wednesdays normally for the .NET countdown, where they look at the best and the worst of professional wrestling each week. Jason Powell does a weekly Q&A audio on Fridays, where he answers both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. I do an audio show that's been a little bit of everything here recently. I've done a lot of interviews just this past week, just yesterday, actually. I have an interview up with, or actually, it'll be posted today, did it Friday afternoon, a interview with Black Quackenbush of Chikara, talking about King of Trios. There's also recent interviews from me up with Mike Bennett, the Prodigy from Ring of Honor, and the Ring of Honor World Champion, Kevin Steen, has also stopped by for about a 20-minute interview with me. Lots of other audio on the site that's been done recently. Jason Powell recently spoke with Court Bauer, former WWE creative team member. So a ton of audio there on the site for our members. And if you sign up to be a member, you get access to all of that, plus the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section. So it's a good time to become a .NET member. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Look on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up link. Click there, and we'll get you started. $7.50 a month if you take the month-to-month option. But if you want to take the annual option, we'll knock $2 off a month, drop you down to $5.50. And it's a good time. It's always a good time to sign up to be a member. But with all these recent interviews, and I hope to have some more, there's the Ring of Honor show coming up tonight in Charlotte. I hope to be able to get some stuff there. King of Trios is coming up next weekend. The plan is for me to be able to go and to be able to report about that show from there live all through the weekend and have some more interviews there. But a good chunk of that, most of that, is going to be exclusive to our members. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, head over right now to .NET, ProWrestling.net, and click on the link to get signed up. Jake, we're 2 weeks away. We have one show after this one. Before we get to Night of Champions, we know what the World Heavyweight Championship match is, and that is Alberto Del Rio challenging again against Sheamus. But the new wrinkle after what played out on Monday with Ricardo Rodriguez and Sheamus, and it played into tonight's show, the big news is I guess we'll go into Night of Champions with the Bro Kick banned because Booker T has said it's too dangerous, and that's taking something out of the arsenal of Sheamus. Do you think it's going to make the difference and Del Rio's going to get the win this time?
No, I really don't. Just because how they're portraying it. I mean, they went out of their way to have the Booker ban the Bro Kick in the middle of Sheamus's main event match last night with David Otunga, but they didn't really even try to make it seem like a weakness. You know, you would think that with this story that they're trying to tell, they would try to make it put Sheamus at a real disadvantage, but, I mean, it just seems like he picked up right where he left off with the Texas Cloverleaf, and he's picking up submission victories rather easily. So, I don't know why we went through all this trouble to get the Bro Kick banned if he's just going to start I'll just go back to this move and pick up easy victories. So I don't know. It doesn't really seem like Sheamus is in any disadvantage at all, so I don't expect to lose that chance.
Yeah, so far the announcement of the banning of the Bro Kick, an announcement that takes away the finishing maneuver of the world champion, the only thing that it has cost said world champion is one punch to the face by David Otunga. That's it. I mean, he turns around, he takes the one punch after, and Otunga laid there like he was dead the entire time. Booker T comes out and makes the announcement, and then he pops up, gets one punch in on Sheamus. After all of that, he's able to get in one punch, and then Sheamus just rolls him up in the Texas Cloverleaf and has him tapping almost immediately. Where do you think they're going with this? Is this how they're going to get Ziggler over? Are they going to play that out at Night of Champions, you think, where he probably goes to the Bro Kick a couple of times and the ref, says you have to stop? I mean, my guess is at this point, is sometime between now and next week on SmackDown, it may even happen there, Del Rio is going to get a stipulation added that if Sheamus uses the Bro Kick, Del Rio becomes the champion. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they still have a week for this all to play out. I mean, they can add other wrinkles to this, but it just really felt odd to me that they went so far out of their way to get the bro kick banned with Monday's angle with Ricardo that it seemed like they would at least try to make it seem like Sheamus was at a disadvantage. But I fully expect there to be, you know, some added stipulations. And I do think, you know, just based on, you know, how frequently Dolph Ziggler was shown taking brogue kicks in their various video packages and the pictures they showed backstage, you know, in the Otunga and Booker backstage segment with the x-rays and whatnot, I have a feeling that this is going to play strongly into Ziggler's hand more so than it will Del Rio. So, I'm expecting we'll see a stipulation and maybe a cash-in at Night of Champions.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's a real chance that we get a Ziggler cash in. I thought maybe it would be that way last month just because I couldn't believe they would go back to it again. The Del Rio Sheamus match again, they did going back to it again this time. If Ziggler can get a high quality win over Randy Orton, and I guess that's the other news. We'll just announce it. We'll come back in a second. It is going to be Randy Orton. I guess it is officially announced on the show, but you know, Teddy Long said I will advise Booker T to make that match. I'm sure he won't have a problem with it. So we can say it is going to be Dolph Ziggler versus Randy Orton at Night of Champions. And if Ziggler can get a win there, and they can find a way to make the bro kick thing, you know, weaken Sheamus enough to allow Ziggler to cash in, that could be a pretty good thing. David Otunga, of course, attached to these guys, he goes out there and has to do the job while Del Rio is able to smile from ringside. I mean, is this salvaging the feud in any way? I know we've talked before that it's just gone off the rails because it's too much. We've seen too many clean wins from Sheamus. We've seen him in the ring 1,000 times. We just saw it again this past Monday on Raw. You know, are they breathing new life into this feud, or is it still just as flat and stale as it was a month ago?
You know, I mean, they're trying their best. You know, they've given Del Rio some meaningful wins. You know, he's beaten Orton. You know, he's beaten Cena now. I mean, that one was more crooked than the Orton victory, but you know, they're at least trying to breathe some life into Del Rio. I still don't buy at any point that he's a significant challenge for Sheamus, just because every time they get in the ring together, you know, Sheamus ends up hitting him with the brogue kick, or, you know, Del Rio ends up hightailing it up the ramp. You know, it just doesn't feel at any point that he's an actual threat to the champion. He beats, you know, main event stars outside the, you know, outside the title, but, you know, I've never felt at any point like he was a threat, and this last month really hasn't cemented that any differently, so. I think the feud is just where it was a month ago. We're just kind of waiting for it to end.
Yeah, I agree. Del Rio's gotten some good wins, and you know, again, having a horse cat playing in the middle of the ring was a great win for him. But it's just that's the problem is that I believe he can win another match. I just don't believe they're going to put him over on the champion. I just don't think they're going to put him over on Sheamus. If he puts Sheamus down and Ziggler cashes in and is successful in doing so, which I do think whenever it is, he will be successful in doing so. If Del Rio is the guy that kind of sets it up, that would be a nice feather in his cap. But again, it's just a little bit, and I'm not saying it's best to make him champion. It's just a matter of how they've, you know, something we talk about all the time about once characters get damaged, you can fix them, but it takes time. You can't just do it overnight. Yeah, you can do it fairly quickly, but it has to be methodical. And once they're damaged, they're there. They're damaged, and it hurts stories and everything else. And they're so poor with their characters right now. They're doing such a poor job of them. It's unbelievable. And again, to Randy Orton and Dolph Ziggler, you've got Dolph Ziggler running around with the briefcase, and now he's challenging Randy Orton at Night of Champions. I mean, wouldn't it make sense if you're the Money in the Bank briefcase holder that you want to just chill at Night of Champions in case you have an opportunity to go after the championship?
You would think so. I mean, that would make the most sense. You want to be at 100% in case the opportunity comes for you to cash in. I guess they tried to sell the idea that the weak attack that Orton, you know, put on him a couple of punches or whatever tonight enraged him to the point where he challenged him for a match. But it just feels kind of flimsy. I don't know. I mean, I'm happy to have that they're having the match on the pay-per-view because I really like what Orton and Ziggler have been doing together. But, yeah, the story itself is pretty well writes paper thin.
I mean, it might be the sleeper match of the show. It might be the one that when it's over, people are breathless about. I mean, I think about the matches that Orton and Christian had, and we've seen good stuff, really good stuff from Ziggler and Orton. I don't think they've ever been in a position where they could show us great stuff, and a pay-per-view match is one where they could. And I mean, that might be one that we're really buzzing about after that show was over. It's just kind of some dumb logic in how they got there. And then the other news coming out, primetime players are your number one contenders. They are headed to the Night of Champions to face off with Kofi Kingston and R-Truth. Is this where they finally pull the trigger and put the titles on those guys?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think Kofi and R-Truth have kind of ran out of steam. I mean, as the tag team champs, if they ever had any to begin with. They seem to be really, kind of planting seeds at least for the Rey and Sin Cara tag team, which has looked really solid every time they've been in the ring together. So I don't know if now is the time where they pull the trigger or if they're going to put the belts on the primetime players and have Rey and Sin Cara actually move into the tag team division in earnest or what exactly their plans are. But, I mean, at this point, I think Rey and Sin Cara might be the flashiest and the most solid-looking tag team they have in the company.
Yeah, I think they have plans for them long term. I think short term we're actually going to see that tag match that we'll talk about later in the show, Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio versus Cody Rhodes and The Miz. I think we're going to see those in singles matches at Night of Champions, ultimately is my guess where they go with that. But we'll see how that plays out. I guess we will take this show apart from start to finish here. The show opened with a recap of Raw again, Ricardo taking the bro kick from Sheamus on Monday. And then the subsequent legal threats by David Otunga via tout. Ricardo was then shown backstage. When it was, at first, the door to the SmackDown GM's office opens. You have Del Rio who steps out, and then Otunga steps out, and then out comes Ricardo in his neck brace. And he takes a couple of shuffling steps, and then everything kind of binds up on him. He grabs at the neck collar, and the other two stop, and are really considerate to him and whatnot. Just, I thought it was kind of funny the way he really overreacted to it or overacted with the hurt neck. It was kind of cute. We get the standard SmackDown entrance at that point, our intro with the pyro, Josh Matthews and Booker T checking in on commentary. Del Rio's music hits, and then out comes he and Otunga and Ricardo. Ricardo, of course, just inching his way through the ring, really laying it on thick how bad he's hurt. Del Rio grabs a mic, opens the show, said he was on a roll of his career. He talked about all the different victories he had recently. He mentioned Randy Orton and Kane, John Cena. Said that he wasn't completely happy. He said if his match with Sheamus was a battle of skill and intelligence, he would win. But he said that Sheamus had an unfair advantage because of the dangerous nature of the bro kick, and it should be banned. Del Rio jumped into his whole criminal thing. This is where, to me, he's kind of gone off the rails. Every time he starts talking about, criminal with Sheamus stealing his car and here this is a criminal act, he tends to go back to that phrase a lot, and I thought he kind of lost his way here and rambled some. He said Ricardo is not only his personal ring announcer, but he's his only friend. He said due to the kick, Ricardo may have suffered permanent physical and emotional damage. Again, starts rambling again about being a criminal act. Said his cross-arm breaker is artistic, but the bro kick is barbaric. Otunga took the mic at that point and said that Sheamus' actions were malicious and intentional, really sounding like a lawyer. They again repeated the bro kick should be banned. He said, here's our evidence. They showed the video. It showed a bunch of different guys getting, knocked out by the bro kick. He said he had met with the SmackDown GM and asked for compensation and damages. For what had happened to Ricardo. Booker T's music hits at that point. He comes out on the ramp, waggling his finger at him. He says, I can't believe you did that. You really wanted to, we've talked in private. It was supposed to stay private. But you want to come out here and run your mouth in front of the people, so fine, I'll take it to the people. WWE Universe, should I ban the bro kick? And the crowd, of course, said no and booed the idea. He said, let me ask that again. He did. They again said no and boo. He looked at him and said, the bro kick, as far as he's concerned, is still legal. He did the "Can you dig that sucker" line and stepped off, and that ended the opening segment. We got some announcements for matches and for the tag team match coming up next. But I think this is Del Rio's biggest weakness, and maybe this is why they refuse to keep pushing him. Is that I don't think he's in scripted promos. I think he's very good. I think if you tell him exactly what to say, he can go out there, he can deliver it, and it doesn't even sound like a scripted promo. If, and this may have been scripted, but it just feels like suddenly they're giving him some wiggle room, and or maybe the opposite is true. Maybe he had wiggle room before, and now they're scripting him more. I don't know, but it feels like they're giving him different material, and he tends to just go in circles. I mean, I don't know how many times he said the word criminal, both last night and the night that they played out the whole gimmick with the car being stolen. So, but I think that's his weakness is in his mic work. And I said, I don't know if he can't remember lines, and so that's what the problem is here, and he's trying to do it, and so he looks uncomfortable, or if he's better at remembering lines, and they've loosened the strings on him some, and now that he's all on his own, his instincts aren't very good. But what do you think of this opening segment?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got the same impression. I didn't think anybody who talked here was particularly compelling. I mean, for the reasons you mentioned for Del Rio, he just kind of rambled at times. And I don't know if he lost his place in his promo, and it took him a while to get his bearings so he could get back to the subject matter at hand or whatever. But he does seem to repeat himself a lot. And he did the same thing last month, or maybe it was 2 months ago now, with the with the whole car storyline, you know, when he had that promo on SmackDown, you know, where he was better, he's been better than normal, you know, in his over the last 6 months, I'd say, you know, his promos in this feud with Sheamus have been better than his average, but he still tends to lose his place, takes him a while to get back to it. He seems kind of unfocused in that way, and, you know, maybe they just gave him note cards with some, you know, with some bullet points on it, and they want him to expand on it. But I just think he ends up repeating the catchphrases and the bullet points repeatedly or something, because it just didn't come off on television as somebody who knew what they were going to say when they went out there, and that's kind of a problem. I mean, it just kind of felt like he was winging it, and I'm not sure that's the impression that they wanted him to have. And Otunga was just monotone, and that's my biggest complaint with him, and it always has been. It just hasn't been. He just hasn't really delivered on the mic. And I thought for a lawyer, he did a fair share of rambling himself. So, I don't know. It just didn't – the whole segment didn't have a whole lot of credibility. It just kind of felt like, you know, just, well, here's the opening segment. We have a couple of minutes where the promo is written here, but we want these guys to talk for 10. And so they filled in the blanks by repeating themselves. But it was just kind of boring to me, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Otunga needs to make that lawyer act a little more over the top. I think he's got the right idea for being measured and all those sorts of things, but you're right, he's drifting into monotone, and he has for some time. If he can just really make that over the top and make the, again, not go into the monotone range, but very measured and keep the dry and all of that. He just needs to tweak it. I don't really know the best way to say it, but he drifts out of, you know, good lawyer act into monotone, you know, what you really get if you actually sit into a court and listen to guys, you know, go over technical nuances and stuff. You're like, oh, God, this is boring me to death. He needs to get away from that and have a little more charisma, be over the top in his lawyer act. After the commercial break, we get a video recap of Rey Mysterio and Cody Rhodes. Their match from the last week that was shown, with Sin Cara making the save and putting the mask on Cody's head. Then we get entrances for our first match of the night, Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio defeating Miz and Cody Rhodes at 10 minutes and 55 seconds. Finish on this came when Cody accidentally kicks Miz, which leads to Cody getting taken out by Sin Cara on the floor, which allows Rey to hit the 619 and the splash from the top for the win. You know, good match, a lot of fun. Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio, very good together. I think they could have a really good feud with the Primetime Players if they pull the trigger and put the belt on them this time at Night of Champions. They give me the most hope about a real tag team division, because I think WWE is starting to like them, and if they get behind them, then they'll put resources in the tag team division, and they could be the guys to really help kickstart it. They're putting more emphasis on it in the sense of having more teams, but they're not really paying it any attention. Sin Cara and Rey can make that attention come, but I do think that we also saw here, I predicted Thursday that we were going to see Rey and Miz for the Intercontinental Championship at Night of Champions, Sin Cara and Rhodes maybe even in a mask match of some sort. I don't know. There's not a lot of time left to really get that going. But I do think that they have real potential as a tag team. And I know you're real high on them as a tag team.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the reason I'm high on them is just because, you know, I've always liked Ray. And I know a lot of people don't for different reasons. But I've always enjoyed Ray, in smaller doses. I don't like him as much in extended matches. I think his act is too repetitive for really long matches. But I like Ray in a tag situation, and I also like that Sin Cara seems more motivated when he's in the ring with Ray. I mean, the biggest problem with Sin Cara was that he was, having issues with botched spots, and people in the ring, that he was working with weren't selling moves properly for him. And I think he's maybe cleared some of that up and, is more motivated to improve now that he's got somebody backstage and maybe he idolizes or relates to or whatever the case may be. It just seems like he's in a much better place now that he's been teamed up with Ray. He seems like he's motivated and a lot crisper in the ring. And maybe they're not directly related, and I'm just fantasizing about that. But it does seem like they've improved greatly. And I think you're right about the tag team division. I think they could be a team if they actually, got similar gear and they appeal to kids. They don't talk well enough to say anything controversial in the PG era. So they seem tailor made for the tag team belt at this point.
How funny would it be to consider Rey Mysterio the talker of the group?
Yeah, that's the part. That's the part where you got to get concerned. But hopefully he doesn't have to talk too much. And the match on SmackDown was, it was everything you would expect from a tag match with a couple of commercial breaks in it. I mean, there wasn't a ton to watch here, but when the action sped up and you actually saw some quick sequences from Rey and Sin Cara with some flashy offense, I thought everything looked very good. So, it wasn't a match you put on pay-per-view just because we didn't, there was a lot of commercial breaks and we didn't see a ton of action in that 11 minutes, but it was definitely a great TV match that I think showcased Sin Cara and Rey pretty well.
Do you think, just as a quick aside, do you think it's possible that the reason why Sin Cara looks more comfortable with Rey is he's not a great English speaker. I don't know how well, he's progressed in his English, but, when he came in, he spoke very, very, very little English. They didn't put him in a developmental situation where he could spend some time doing that. Do you think it's just a matter of communication that Rey is able to build that bridge?
That definitely could be a part of it. I mean, we don't know the particulars, obviously. I mean, maybe his English is improving. Maybe he's found some new motivation. It's hard to find a precise answer since we just honestly don't know. But it definitely seems like he's starting to pick up the WWE style a little better. He doesn't seem as confused in the ring. He's not botching as many spots. I mean, he's hitting his stride, and whether that has to do with not having to carry an entire match because he has the opportunity to tag out, I don't know. But the combination of things is working for him right now.
Yeah, and Rey, Rey can always use a break too of not having to carry a whole match. His knee is, he's healthy in the general sense, but that knee has got to be replaced at some point. And if it's already reached that point, that any impact on it is just continued damage. That's not going to make life easy for Rey. So anytime he can get a break as well, it's probably a good idea for WWE and for Rey Mysterio to take advantage of that. They could be a very good tag team to watch. We get the announced team put over Heyman and CM Punk for Monday. They promised to show more later. They cut backstage to Daniel Bryan, who was walking around, kind of breathing and trying to stay calm and in control. Hornswoggle walks up says, "Hey man, what's wrong? You mad? But come on, let's hug it out. And Bryan just staring at him, he's like, "All right, okay, I'm just teasing." And stuck his hand down, seriously, man, seriously. And finally, Daniel Bryan shakes his head, like, "See, it's good. And Hornswoggle stomped on his foot and ran away, and Bryan started a fit backstage, all pissed off. Just real quick before we go to the match, this actually did not make me laugh. This kind of frustrated me. This was the first moment where I was like, wow, that was just dumb. Like, they've been really lucky that we were Kane going in and just, when anger management first started, it's like, this is stupid. And then Kane came in and completely changed everybody's opinion about that. The hug thing, as ridiculous as it was, I understand why it worked, even if I didn't personally like it. But this, to me, was the first time where it was like, okay, that was just dumb. I'm more frustrated by that part, what they just showed for this story, than anything else. Maybe it was just me, but that, I don't know, maybe it was just Hornswoggle, but I thought there was no need. We get what's going on. This just was dumb.
Yeah, you know, they seem to want to remind us incessantly that Brian has anger issues. You know, it's not that we saw, you know, four segments with him on Monday. We needed a reminder before his match tonight that he had anger management problems, and this is what they came up with. So I don't know. I wasn't as frustrated by it as you were. It just kind of blew over my head. But, it definitely is kind of insulting to the audience that they think that we need these constant reminders about storylines. You know, like they couldn't have just sent him out to the ring and we wouldn't have been able to get a video clip from Monday or something. I don't know. It felt pointless on a, you know, on a level that nothing else on the show did.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. Just like I said, if they wanted to remind us, okay, but that's the best they could come up with. Really, that's the best you guys can do. But that did lead to our second match of the night, Zack Ryder defeating Daniel Bryan by DQ / referee reversal in about 3 minutes and a second. They start off with, you know, Bryan, of course, Daniel Bryan makes his ring entrance and the fans are yelling no, and he's fighting it off and doing the breathing exercises and all of that. You get Daniel Bryan kind of snaps in the ring, starts doing all the kicks and everything, and kind of freaks out a little bit. Not bad, but just some. Zack Ryder is able to come back, hit the broski boot, and Bryan gets up on his knees and starts begging, no, wait, I'm sorry. Let's hug it out. And, Ryder gives him the, are you serious, bro? But he insists, and so finally they hug it out, and Bryan uses that to twist the arm around and lock on the no lock, which Ryder, I think, was tapping before Bryan even had it fully locked in. He tapped so fast. Bryan puts it right back on, refuses to let go with the ref yelling at him, so the ref steps out, reverses the decision, which, of course, at that point, Bryan does have the complete meltdown in the ring, screaming and hollering, stomping around, dropping to his knees, completely worked up and out of control. It's a 3 minute match. It was what it was. I could complain about Ryder getting, you know, buried again when he worked so hard to get over, and WWE just sucks the way they do people like this sometimes. It was exactly like the segment backstage with Hornswoggle. It's just another thing to show us that Daniel Bryan has anger management, and that's really all it was.
Yeah, I think I said in my report that Ryder was pretty invisible there. I mean, you could have put any Joe Schmo out in there for that match, and it wouldn't have went off all that different. You know, it definitely was a showcase match for Bryan and his anger management problems. And I don't know why we needed another reminder. You know, it didn't really progress the story at all. So I'm hoping we're just going to get the match book between he and Kane for Night of Champions and let this thing die there, because it's kind of running its course at this point.
After the break, we get a guy who is getting a decent rub at this point, Damian Sandow. He steps out with a microphone as his music plays. He said he knew there was a match scheduled next, but he had to get something off his chest. He said he lost a match to Sheamus last week, and that he saw it was nothing more than karmic justice, or that he saw it as nothing more as karmic justice. He complained that he wasn't given proper time to study his opponent and seek out their weaknesses so he could exploit them. He bragged about never having been pinned, and then said he took umbrage with those on social media who had called him a coward. He said that his actions last week were intelligent, not craven. He continued to run down. He got good heat from the crowd. He said no one in the crowd had the courage to call him craven to his face. Randy Orton's music cuts him off in the middle of his next sentence. Orton comes out, grabs the microphone, and says he did not come out here to add anything to the conversation. He said he wasn't there to talk. He was there to fight. He said Booker T had scrapped the other match and told him that he wanted Sandow. David said that wasn't fair and Booker T couldn't do that, but Orton said he already did. They faced off. Well, before we go on from there, Sandow cut a decent promo here. It wasn't, you know, blow away stuff, but he's getting good heat. I just, you know, as we see how this plays out with him, running away, I just wonder, you know, if they have a plan for him right now, or if he just kind of stuck in one of those holding patterns. I think he's a good act, and the crowd reacted well to his promo. But, you know, if he keeps just kind of doing this same thing, promo, run away, I don't know how much heat he's going to be able to continue to draw if they're holding him. So I worry if they have a plan, but did you like this? I liked it a lot.
Yeah, just as kind of a one-off, confrontation with Orton, I thought it was pretty good. You know, he managed to, you know, to kind of play himself off from his loss last week pretty well. You know, he did do the intelligent thing by running away from Sheamus, whether fans agree or not. I mean, he would have probably ended up taking a brogue kick and losing that match. I was surprised at that point that he didn't try to integrate the brogue kick into his promo, but otherwise, you know, he managed to, you know, to keep the intelligence or the erudition of his character, intact. He's using, you know, multi or polysyllabic words very well, and he's actually being quite articulate with his promos, and he's not shooting it too far over the audience's head, but at the same time, it's enough to get the redneck and the crowd angry, and I think that's the point.
The rednecks in the crowd. How many rednecks are there in Moline, Illinois?
You'd be surprised.
Well, that led to our third match.
Illinois is all redneck.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
That's from being here in the South, I don't know the Midwest all that well. I know I'm a terrible human being. But third match of the night, Randy Orton defeating Damian Sandow at 9 minutes and 48 seconds, winning by countout. In the botch moment of the night, or at least if I thought I was right about remembering this, they face off. I'm pretty sure we heard a bell. And then we get Dolph Ziggler's music. Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero come out and join the commentary team. Well, Dolph does. Vicky just stood there. Thank God. And then they rang the bell again. Did they ring the bell twice? I'm almost positive they did, didn't they?
Yeah, I thought they rang the bell as soon as Orton, said he already did, and then they started circling each other, and then all of a sudden, Ziggler's music hit, and then they rang the bell again after he sat down on commentary. So I was confused. I had to stop and restart my match timer because I.
Yeah, okay, I'll do it because I was like, I'm watching. I was like, God dang it, they already rang the bell, didn't they? What? Wait a minute, you know, and it's not worth going back and checking, but it's just a moment where I'm like, no, they've already done this once. But you get Orton defeating Sandow with Ziggler on the mic. The finish comes. Orton hits the scoop slam, as Michael Cole calls it. Sandow rolls to the apron. The whole time, this is, you know, Orton is constantly looking over at Ziggler and occasionally jawing with Ziggler. They went to the floor once, and Sandow was able to use Orton, you know, concerned with Ziggler to take advantage and get some offense in. But they end up doing, he pulls him out for the DDT. Orton's looking over at Ziggler, or he hits the DDT. Orton again stares down at Ziggler. He starts sitting up for the RKO, pounding on the mat and whatnot. Sandow sees it coming, slides out of the ring, runs up the ramp, gets himself counted out. There you go. So Ziggler finishes calling the match and puts the headset down. He and Vicky start to leave. Orton jumps out in front of him and stops him. They start swinging, end up in the ring. Ziggler goes right for him, but Orton hits that same power slam again, sets up for the RKO. Sandow, for some reason, runs back out, grabs Orton. They stand there and look at each other for what felt like 20 minutes, and then Orton hits the RKO, which gives Ziggler time to escape the ring and flee up the ramp with Vicky, leaving Orton seething in the ring. I was impressed with the match. I think Sandow showed that he's a very good talent in the ring, and Orton, you know, for all of his shortcomings, and he can have a boring match. If you put a guy in there with Randy that can work his style, he has had great matches. We could talk about several of them. Again, talking earlier about, you know, with Christian, that little run with Christian, their matches were great. So, and he and Sandow worked well together. Sandow's tall like him, and I think they played well off of each other's strengths and had a very entertaining match. And I like the ending in that they're protecting Sandow. I just hope it doesn't become his gimmick. I like the smart heel, but I want the smart heel to be able to use that intelligence to win, not use that intelligence to run away. Any moron can run away. So I just hope that's not where they're going with his gimmick. That's my biggest fear. But What you? I mean, you know, you seem to like the match. You like Orton and Ziggler the way they're trading wins back and forth. I saw in your report. So I take it you liked what they had to do here completely.
Yeah, I mean, I've liked what they've done, you know, trying to set up this this story with Orton and Ziggler. I still think, you know, Orton is kind of bland on the microphone, and he has been, you know, in this feud too. But what kind of, I don't know if it bugged me or not. I mean, I went back and watched it again after the show was over last night, and Ziggler's commentary just kind of was ill-defined. I didn't really get a sense of his character out of it. So if there was any kind of minus on this match, it kind of felt like Ziggler's commentary was kind of a drawback. Just I don't think he did a very good job of establishing who Dolph Ziggler is, even though he had quite a bit of time to talk on the commentary booth.
Yeah, I got completely lost my train of thought there. I'm sorry, you said something, and I had something I was going to say, but I lost my train of thought there. How terrible is that? You're talking about, you said Orton's not been very good on the mic. No, he's not. He's tanked by numbers on the mic so many times. And he's not been good in this feud either. But what they're doing in Ziggler's commentary, you know, you've got two guys who aren't doing great on the mic, and they're still able to get this story over. It shows you how well they're working in the ring together. Ziggler was comfortable on the headset. I really listened to him. I think most of our listeners know, and if we have new listeners, welcome and thank you for listening. I do some play-by-play work for a couple of different indie groups, and I've had to do iPay-per-view stuff, so I've done it live, I've done it recorded, and I have an ear tuned to that sort of thing. I hope at least, and listening to him, he sounded comfortable and good. He played off of what guys would give him when he was set up. He would do well, and even when he wasn't necessarily set up, he added some stuff. But he, you're right, it was directionless. We didn't get a good feeling of who Dolph Ziggler was there, and that might be the biggest miss of the show, in that he had that opportunity to make that imprint, to say, this is Dolph Ziggler, and he sounded comfortable enough to be able to do it, but it didn't happen. I don't know if somebody was in his ear the whole time, and he never really got a chance to say what he wanted to say, or what, but yeah, I think directionless is the best way to describe it, because he was out there, he did a competent job of calling the match and playing off the other announcers, but he didn't tell us anything, he didn't tell a story, he didn't define himself in any way, so yeah, I think you nailed it on the head there. We transitioned backstage at that point. David Otunga showing Booker T of X-rays in the training room. He's got a normal spine up, and then he shows another spine the vertebrae in that spine were jacked up, man. They were all over the place. I don't know if that's some accident they got from somewhere, or if they, you know, you get computers to kind of put those sorts of things together. I don't know how they got it, but that was a rough-looking X-ray. Otunga said he was going to have to file a lawsuit that would include Eve and Teddy Long and Booker T if because he was demanding the bro kick was going to demanding the bro kick be banned, and that if he didn't get his way, he was going to sue everybody and take Booker T for everything. Booker said that he had no right to demand anything, that the only demand around there was him, as in the man. So now he wanted to demand that Otunga make his way to the ring, and he would face the world heavyweight champion. And then he would think about the bro kick. And so Otunga left in a huff. D-man, D-ring, D-world champion. Come on, Jake. Seriously?
Yeah, that was silly. The X-ray, I mean, if that's what a bro kick does, shouldn't Dolph Ziggler have, like, died 11 times now? And
yeah,
he's taken about 15 bro kicks. And they're kind of jumping the shark on the neck damage thing, but that Booker T stuff was just silly and over the top. I actually thought Otunga was better here, though. He had better delivery backstage than he did out in the ring. So that was an improvement,
yeah.
but Booker made an ass out of himself there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Otunga was better here. But Booker T, when he started doing D-Man, I was like, oh, come on, Booker, don't do it. But too late. After commercial, Kofi and R-Truth are joining the commentary team, Usos, Primetime Players, and Primo and Epico in the ring for our fourth match tonight. Primetime Players winning and becoming the number one contenders for the WWE Tag Team Championships. in about 3 minutes and 48 seconds, they will face Truth and Kofi at Night of Champions for those titles. You know, a pretty good match. These teams are good. They were in there. The finish was a mess with, you know, everybody. We ended up with Darren Young hitting his finisher on Primo, I believe it was. One of the Usos hits their splash from the top and covers, but Young shoves him out of the ring and dives on and makes the cover for his team to get their win. They kind of jawed with Truth and Kofi at ringside. Kofi, I thought, was good and very comfortable and, you know, knows who he is and was just fantastic on the mic. And R-Truth was, well, you know, he's, since he's been doing this little Jimmy gimmick, he is what he is. But to me, this was kind of the most frustrating moment of the night because I'm listening to Kofi on the headset. And I'm like, God dang it, Kofi can talk. Like, he may not be the greatest promo ever, but he can talk. And he was, I thought he was good here. And you just reminded me, you just reinforced how pissed off I am that the only thing you can ever do with Kofi is put him in a meaningless mid-card title run where you just give him the Intercontinental Championship and let him defend it against 100 people with no backstory, or you do the same thing to him in the tag division with somebody, and the guy can talk. I mean, this really exposed how, or not necessarily exposed, we've known, but reminded, reinforced how bad they are using Kofi Kingston.
Yeah, it really is a shame because, I mean, he really is one of their most talented guys. And, you know, Punk has made the case for him numerous times, talks about him quite a bit. You know, he's made a couple of appearances on the Yard Wrestling podcast talking about how he travels with Kofi and, you know, how the underrated he is. And I think that's true. You know, he doesn't get a lot of credit, but I think he is a very good in-ring performer when he's given the opportunity to, you know, to showcase it. And he, like we saw tonight, he is a, you know, he's very competent on the microphone. So it's surprising that we don't see more Kofi in the upper card. And probably that a lot of that has to do with, you know, just character development. He has a really poorly defined character. We don't really know what his motivations are. And, you know, that's on creative, you know. Maybe he does okay with what's given to him, you know, but he seems like one of the guys they could actually put out there, and you know, he can get all ages of fans behind him, and he has you know, an interesting in-ring repertoire, and he's you know, nice to listen to on the microphone. He doesn't sound unnatural at all, so it's a real shame, and I hope they get their head out of their ass.
Yeah, this kind of pissed me off. It just laid it out there. It was like, oh look, here's this guy. Listen to him talk. He knows exactly what he's doing, but we're always going to misuse him. He's, you know, like I said, you ran through all his list of skills. I'm not going to rehash it here. That's what that entire segment did. As much as I think the primetime players can be a fun act, even if they're still rough around the edges and they're trying to find it, and I do think they're going to win the titles and should win the titles that Night of Champions. Just coming out of that, me personally was sitting there going, God dang it, they are misusing Kofi, and that was the proof. We got a plug for it before the commercial, and then after the commercial we get the Raw Rebound video, which recaps CM Punk, just kind of his reign of terror through Chicago on Monday, starting with the Jerry Lawler attack, going to the Cena attack at the end with Heyman in the car. They quoted, they came back to the announce team, and they quoted asked about how Paul Heyman would fit into the match at Night of Champions, as they were obviously together. You know, Jason and I talked about this on .NET Weekly. He talked about it in Raw audio. I added mine on .NET Weekly. So just quickly, yours. What do you think about Paul Heyman and CM Punk together? How do you think Paul Heyman plays into all of this? And more importantly, I guess not more importantly, but were you as surprised as I was that this didn't set the internet on fire? Like, there was buzz. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't like everybody ignored it. But when I saw that, my first thought was, oh, God, we're going to crash the site. And even Twitter and those places didn't explode like we've seen it done before.
Yeah, I think it might have been a bigger deal if we hadn't seen so much of Heyman recently. You know, I think, you know, it's not quite as impactful as it would have been had he just come out of the cold and appeared with Punk. But, you know, I'm actually excited to see where it's going. You know, I think they have a lot of interesting storyline opportunities here. You know, they have a lot of history with Punk and Cena. They have a lot of history with Punk and Triple H. They have a lot of history between Lesnar and Cena and Lesnar and Triple H. And Heyman's involved in some way, shape, or form with all these characters now. And, you know, so I'm thinking what they're trying to do is establish the groundwork for maybe a tag match between Punk and Lesnar and Cena and Triple H at Survivor Series or something coming up quickly. And I think that's a good idea. But for now, you know, I don't think Punk necessarily needs anyone to talk for him. So if Heyman is just the evil advisor, I think that would work nicely, you know, until they want to bring Lesnar back on TV. But I don't necessarily think that, you know, that Punk needs a voice. And so I'm not sure how much, you know, I really want to see Heyman and Punk together on television talking, just because I think there's, you know, the Punk is so well, you know, tuned into his character that it doesn't seem like he needs a manager at this point.
Yeah, that was kind of my thing. Was I just, you know, my only negative of the whole thing, and I'm excited about it too. I can't wait to see what they're going to do. My only negative is, you know, really, this is the best we can do with Paul Heyman to get other guys over. Punk's over. He doesn't need help getting over. Heyman could be the mouthpiece for some younger guys that could be great. I don't think they would, but, you know, does this rekindle any hope or belief that we might see that Ring of Honor style or that Ring of Honor kind of core based faction that people wanted to see with Antonio Cesaro, the former Flavio Castagnoli, Cassius Ohno, the former Chris Hero, and Seth Rollins, the former Tyler Black. You think there's any chance now? Does this breathe new life into that theory, or is that theory still dead?
I don't know if it's necessarily dead. I would consider it a long shot, as long as you know, as Punk is involved in this main event scene. You know, I could see it happening. You know, if they plan on taking the title off of Punk, you know, at some point in the fall here, and they want to, you know, develop something for him away from you know, the major title scene. You know, they might be able to do that, and I think that would be more interesting in that way. You know, having Punk hold the title and recruit lackeys is probably not as interesting as him plotting to get his title back and doing so by building a faction. So I don't think it's dead, but I still think it's a pretty long shot.
Yeah, I agree. We got a tout from Eve saying that she was confident that Booker T would do the right thing and keep the superstar safe in reference to the idea of the bro kick getting banned. Backstage, Caitlin and Teddy Long are talking. Long's kind of, you know, whining about having to deal with Otunga and the crusade against the bro kick. By the time Vicky and Dolph walk up, they chase Caitlin away. Katie stopped them from walking to Booker's office, and Booker T was busy. Ziggler demanded that something be done about Orton and said he wanted to defeat him at the prestigious Night of Champions show. Right. Teddy said that he was the senior advisor. He called him just a lackey assistant. He said, "No, that's Eve. I'm senior advisor." And so that's when Ziggler made the line about wanting Orton at Night of Champions. And Teddy said, "Well, tell you what, I will advise Booker T to make that match, and I don't think he'll have a problem with it." That left Ziggler happy, so he walks off. And then Vicky said something to Teddy after that. I can't remember what it was. And then before walking off, and then we've got a Wade Barrett reminder that he was coming up after the commercial break. Basic stuff backstage, nothing really major going on there. That's just how they got to the match. So we'll move past that. We have Yoshitatsu in the ring, and then Wade Barrett makes his much anticipated return. He defeats Yoshitatsu in our fifth match, 1 minute 51 seconds. His finisher this time was not what he'd used before. He kind of wrapped Yoshi up with one arm and then spun him out and yanked him back and hit him with a big swinging elbow that knocked Yoshi out cold. He cut a promo after the match saying that, you know, these meaningless matches, he waited 6 months to come back. It's actually closer to seven. Said that that these meaningless matches were not going to get it. He expected to be in the title hunt immediately. And said that as far as he was concerned, Wade Barrett was open for business. He's back, but I thought those vignettes of him were fantastic and made him look like a total badass. I don't think this worked in his favor. It didn't, you know, there's no damage or anything like that, but I was wildly unimpressed with the return of Wade Barrett.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was just the way the match was set up or what, but the new finisher wasn't really caught that well, you know, on the hard cam when you saw it at first, so it was kind of confusing. It looked like he just kind of punched him in the face, you know, which happens a lot in WWE matches. But
yeah,
the promo after the fact.
Not on Saturday morning, you know, though. Not on Saturday morning.
Yeah, that's true. The promo after the fact, yeah, I didn't really, I don't know if it's just I didn't get it. You know, the open for business thing just kind of was like, what? You know, I would have almost preferred the barrage, but open for business was a little better. But I just didn't get the, if that was supposed to be intense or if he was just declaring that, you know, he was taking on all comers or I don't know. It just, maybe it's just the difference in British English and American English that it was just dead on me. But it just kind of left me wondering what the hell I just listened to.
Yeah, it's a blown opportunity. It just wasn't very impressive. He wasn't great on the mic. He only got, I don't know, a couple of lines in. They didn't give him a lot of time anyway, but he wasn't great on the mic. He didn't look, you know, exceptionally, you know, dominant over Yoshitatsu. He needed to squash Yoshi. I mean, he needed to come out and just beat him to death, and Tatsu got him, I thought, too much offense. Just, I mean, any at all would have been too much. We needed Wade Barrett to just crush somebody, and it's not like Yoshi's been doing anything. Hell, I was kind of half surprised he was still on the roster. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right, Yoshi is still on the roster. The only interaction I get with Yoshitatsu on a weekly basis is a couple of times he'll tweet, and that's how I know he's still alive. So what are they protecting Yoshi for by having him get an offense? They needed Barrett to look like a total badass, and they failed to do that. And I think that's going to they're going to have to address that. They need to give him that big, hard win to really start putting him back over now that he's come back. After the commercial break, we get Del Rio's entrance with a Maserati. Otunga was out after him doing his big pose moment. Sheamus out last. He and Del Rio have a big stare down moment at ringside before our sixth and final match of the night. Sheamus defeating David Otunga in 5 minutes and 16 seconds. Pretty much so all Sheamus. Otunga got in some offense, but primarily all Sheamus. He hits White Noise and backs up in the corner, starts beating on his chest for the bro kick. The crowd's really hot into it because of the story they've told all night. Booker T steps out onto the ramp. Hold up, Sheamus, hold up. I'm sorry to do this to you, but I just, after looking at everything, I've got no choice. I have to ban the bro kick. I'm sorry. He leaves. There was a chorus of boos. Not a lot of heat, but some heat. Del Rio's grinning at ringside and starts jawing at Sheamus. Sheamus starts grinning back. They jaw back and forth for a moment while David Otunga comes back from being murdered. Apparently, they had to do CPR on the guy because they talked for a long time. Finally, Sheamus turns his attention back to Otunga, which again allows Otunga to hit him with one forearm to the face, whip Sheamus into the ropes to get a reversal, Irish curse backbreaker, and then locks him into the Texas Cloverleaf where Otunga was tapping out almost immediately. He even locked it in. He even managed to turn from the hard cam side towards the ramp side so he could stare it at Del Rio while he kept the hold locked in. Otunga tapping the whole time. They took all the heat out of the story, like you said at the beginning of the show. They told a good story, and then at the end they just ripped the legs out from underneath it by having him go over super clean and super strong over Otunga. I didn't expect him to lose, but they come out, they take his big weapon, and he's like, that's okay, I'll just kill you another way.
Yeah, it's kind of like Indiana Jones when somebody takes his whip and he just shoots him with the Luger. It just doesn't really have the dramatic effect, but it was an all right match. I mean, Otunga did his best to look somewhat credible in the ring, even though Sheamus kicked him around for most of that 5 minutes, but it was the finish was never in doubt, and you know it kind of confused me because you know they always present matches as contracts, and so it seemed kind of bizarre that Booker T would just change the match in the middle of it by banning a move, which would be a breach of contract, and I'm not even sure Sheamus would have been obligated to finish at that point, but maybe that's just nitpicking on my part, but it was. It was an all right finish. I mean, they managed to not have Sheamus lose a drop of heat. He didn't look vulnerable at all. I am surprised they didn't go with the Irish cloverleaf or something like that, four-leaf clover, whatever, because it seems like all his other moves have some kind of Irish tinge to them.
Well, Cole did jump in and say, I call it the Texas four-leaf clover because he's Irish.
Okay. I must have tuned that part out. The cloverleaf looks good. I mean, it does look painful. It always looked painful when Malenko used it, too. So, I mean, it's not like the move doesn't look like it hurts. It's just, I was surprised they didn't use this opportunity to at least make Sheamus look slightly vulnerable or have Del Rio get one up on him or something at this point. But, no, they just had him steamroll Otunga like everybody else does. I don't know if Sheamus really gained anything from this match at all.
Yeah, I think they hurt the story. I have another explanation for it. They told a good one coming up, and then at the end, just the way they did it, it was flat. He could have still beaten Otunga, and I think at this point, maybe the best thing they could have done is had Del Rio interfere at that moment and give Otunga a cheap win after that Del Rio interference. And then have Sheamus turn around and kill, you know, Otunga in some way. But, you know, maybe that would have been the best. I don't know. But what they did didn't work, and it took all the heat off of the advantage that Otunga was going, or that Del Rio now got by having the Brokick Band. And they can rebuild that this coming week, but it just seemed unnecessary. Why take the heat off of it? You've given the heel an advantage, let the babyface suffer from that. Let the babyface have to strive to overcome to beat that, and we will like the babyface more. It's not a hard formula. It's really not. It's not quantum physics. It's not some higher end math. It's a very simple formula. Make the heel dominant, make the babyface have to struggle to overcome him, and we will love both guys more for it. It's just that simple. But We got the groundwork for that, but we didn't get the actual payoff for that, which is a shame. That's the end of the show. All we've got for you this week. Jake, you got anything to add before we get out of here?
I do not. We covered everything.
Okay. I will, again, we will be back. I don't know if we will be back next week or not for this audio. My intention is to head to Eastern Pennsylvania for the King of Trios tournament and to be there for all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That makes Sunday night's Night of Champions coverage a little bit interesting, but Jason and I are still trying to figure it all out, figure out what the best way to do everything is. So we may be back next week. We may not be back next week. If not, we will be back the week after that, certainly, I'm sure, with another audio review of SmackDown. If you want to get access to anything I cover from King of Trios next weekend or any of the interviews I might be able to get tonight at the Ring of Honor show, then now is the time again to become a .NET member. So simply head on over to ProWrestling.net. Click on that right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member, sign up. Get access to all the audio that's produced every week on the show, and then you'll have access to the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section. Thank you, everyone, for using .NET as your news source on wrestling on the Internet. We will be back next time. Until then, I'm Chris Shore. That's Jake Barnett. Thank you guys so much for listening. Everyone, have a great weekend, and take care.